That's a really bad launch angle.
Yeah, right? Dude, right into the ground. He hits it into the ground every time.
Yep, directly at the worms.
All those worms are dead, though. They're, like, annihilated. Like, just guts everywhere, worm guts all over the baseball field.
They sing songs about him in worm beer halls.
I think we have her open.
He's their version of Grendel.
The Dynasty Guru presents Dynasty's Child.
We're not experts, we're gurus.
That's different.
With your host, Patrick Magnus.
What loser did you bring to us this week?
Featuring Keaton DeRocher.
Well, I did not know that.
And featuring
Jake, I don't know how to say your last name.
It's Devereaux.
Devereaux?
Devereaux.
Devereaux.
There is no N in the name.
Produced by Adam Lawler.
Hey, you guys. Hey, everybody.
Start over.
Yep, why don't you try that one more time?
Well, welcome to Dynasty's Child, your flagship fantasy baseball podcast with a focus on dynasty formats from the Dynasty Guru. A bit of a two-part episode, trying to work around people's schedules. So today we have myself, Keaton DeRocher, and Jake Devereaux. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing well. Pumped. Holiday season is sort of wrapping up, and yeah, ready to talk some baseball. Hoping some more signings and trades happen soon, and hopefully some of the big names will start to actually move.
Agreed. So Jake and myself will be handling duties tonight, and then either Patrick and Adam or Patrick and Adam and myself will be doing the other half tomorrow. And we'll end up putting together a whole podcast for you. So some little maintenance and reminders before we get into it. Any questions you have for us, you can submit them on Twitter at Dynasty's Child or our email at dynastychildpod@gmail.com. Or, of course, any of our individual Twitters. So, since this is our off-season extravaganza episode, we will start off with Jake and I going over a bunch of trades that have happened. And then all four of us made some New Year's fantasy resolutions. So we will share our resolutions of what we're hoping to maintain and get into in the fantasy year to come. So first up, the three-way trade between the Rangers, Athletics, and Rays. So the Rangers sent Profar to the Athletics. The Athletics sent Eli White and Future Junk to the Rangers. Athletics also sent Emilio Pagan and Future Junk to the Rays. The Rays sent Kyle Bird, Brock Burke, and Yoel Espinal to the Rangers, and then the Rangers traded Raleigh Lacy to the Rays. Obviously, the big name there is Profar now on the Athletics. So, Jake, what is your breakdown or high-level view of this trade from a fantasy perspective?
I think it's good for Profar. It seems like what they're going to do with Profar is have him play second base. He played both short and second and a few other positions over the last couple of years. But it seems like they're going to let Marcus Semien stay at short and play Profar at second. And I think it's great just because playing time for him is going to be super consistent. They're going to let Jed Lowrie walk, which is the smart thing. Profar is still only 25 years old. He's coming off a really strong season where he had 20 home runs and 10 steals. So it's good. It's a good thing. I'm pumped for Profar. And that Oakland A's team is going to be super interesting. So I'm looking forward to it. But in terms of the other guys in the deal, none of these guys are people who should be on even the deepest of fantasy radars at this point. These are a bunch of no-name dudes. And I was kind of looking at a few different sites that go deep, like 30 prospects deep in some of these systems, and there's not much on these guys. So it's, it's Profar and a bunch of dudes.
Patrick, what are you doing here?
I just came to chill, just to see what's up, you know? No biggie.
All right. Are you looking to partake or just listen?
I could partake a little bit. Depends where you guys are at. I obviously don't want to screw up anything, so.
We literally just started.
Yeah, I mean, I got until 5, so it's not a whole lot of time. It might be better if I just listen. I don't want to screw. I mean, I could just duck out, though.
No, that's fine. I was just curious what you were doing.
Yeah, yeah, no, I saw you sent a link, and I was like, well, I've got my stuff, so I'll just pop on and hang out for a minute. So, that's all.
Hey, Patrick.
I missed you guys. Hey, Jake. Sorry I missed you, buddy. Dude, I that trip turned out to be a little more hectic than I anticipated.
They always are. Don't worry about it, man. I'll get you on the next one.
Sounds good. So, yeah, get back to what you're doing. I'll just listen.
All right. Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you. I was kind of surprised at the return that the Rangers ended up getting for Profar. Patrick just recently wrote about Profar in his Risers and Fallers for shortstop and why you should be targeting him. And there's a few other places that have written kind of similar pieces and why you should be targeting Profar with what he did last year in finally what was his first full season in the majors. And then also from the Texas perspective, they finally had a clear path to playing time for Profar, which was the first time that that had happened in the 9 years that he's been with them since he signed. So that it was interesting, the return that they got and the move that they made, but it also kind of clouds Franklin Barreto's future and kind of makes you wonder if the A's are about to give up on him or what they are doing with him. We all kind of assume that Barreto would break through at some point early last year and end up playing the majority of the time at the major leagues. That did not happen at all. So what do you think is Barreto's future here with this trade?
Yeah, that's a good question. I still think Franklin Barreto is a really good player, so I don't anticipate that they'd be willing to give up on him. I guess I'm not sure about the ARB situation, so let me look at that real quick. He has this season and next season under arbitration, and then he becomes a free agent in 2021. So really, they don't have Profar for all that much longer. Yeah, so I'm wondering. Also, Marcus Semien is ARB eligible for the next 2 years, and then he goes. So I wonder if they're just trying to kind of hold him down there as depth until he's needed.
Hey, I'm not a part of this podcast, but I agree with you, Jake. One thing that I was thinking is that perhaps they're competing sooner than they thought they would. I mean, they made it to the wild card game last year, and I just think Oakland is competing a little more, and they need Profar's stat line and his skills are a little more set after last year. And so I think with Barreto, they just don't have the time for him to work it out, and they've already got, you know, Semien's a bit underrated, but I think all the Oakland Athletics are underrated, so okay, I'm not here.
Thanks, Patrick.
You're welcome.
We have to keep that in, the Phantom Patrick coming in. Like, it's going to make no sense for the audience, but I think it makes sense.
This podcast makes no sense to the audience anyways. I think we're fine.
It doesn't make any sense to us, and we're supposed to be running it. Oh, God. All right. I don't know what's going on with Barreto. Obviously, Barreto's sitch is they still have Oakland, that is, has him for 5 more years. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe they're just waiting him out. But it is interesting.
But from a fantasy owner's perspective, though, and I think that's what we care about here on the show, it is super frustrating if you own Barreto at this point. So If someone else in your league is still relatively high on him and thinks that, hey, here's a guy who's really close to the majors and should get some time soon, trade that dude for an asset that can help you this year, especially if you're close, because, you know, you don't have limitless time to wait for these guys, and he's becoming frustrating to wait on. And the package at the end of the day for Franklin Barreto isn't going to be anything that you can't get, you know, elsewhere. It's going to be a good player, but it's not going to be a game changer. So don't feel bad about moving on from him, even if it's for like another couple holds guys or something. If you're in a saves plus holds league, like, just move the guy to help you.
Smart. Yeah, the Barreto owners are seemingly going through what the Profar owners went through for the past, like, 3 years.
It's a cycle.
Yeah. All right, moving on, because we talked about that one for a while. Next trade, the Dodgers made quite a move with the Reds. So Dodgers traded Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, Alex Wood, Kyle Farmer, and Cash to Cincinnati for Homer Bailey, who was released, and then Jeter Downs and Josiah Gray. So this pretty much locks in Harper to the Dodgers, right?
I think it does. Obviously, there's a lot that could happen between now and Harper signing with them, but it certainly makes the Dodgers prohibitive favorites to do so. And that was my prediction preseason, that pre-offseason, that Harper would sign with the Dodgers. So I'm hoping that it comes true, and it seems like it makes a lot of sense. He gets to stay in the National League, play for a really good contending team that seems like it's going to be healthy for a long time. Get out away from that Nationals ownership, which he doesn't seem to like all that much. And he's already dropped a few hints, you know, being from Vegas and liking that thing about him going to the Dodgers. So it's kind of looking that way. Sure, maybe the Dodgers could get cold feet and pivot here, but yeah, it's looking like this was all about Harper.
Yeah, and it's quite a trade for the Reds. Who just kept adding a bunch of outfielders, but they got a pretty solid piece there in Alex Wood to go in their rotation. Rotation is a bit of a wild card. It really look kind of from top to bottom is could be people who put it together and have great seasons or completely fall apart. And then they have an entire rotation of guys that can't get out of the fourth inning, but they've certainly upped their interesting to watch value quite a bit with this deal. And I actually really like Puig playing in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love this trade. I love it for the Reds because they get two starting outfielders and, you know, a really good pitcher for essentially two of their, most rankings, I think, have the prospects that they traded between 7 and 11 in that range. So it's not like these are Nick Senzel. And they're getting these guys, and they're forcing themselves to be in some sort of contention in the division next year. And the cool thing about Puig, Wood, even Tanner Roark, who they acquired as well, as Matt Kemp, is all of those guys' contracts expire after next year. So Puig is on his final arb year. Alex Wood's on his final arb year. Roark's on his final arb year. And Kemp is on the final year of his contract. So if things don't work out the way that they think they are going to, they can just simply dump these guys at the All-Star break and get back some of their prospects. But I agree with you. I think that Puig is going to be better there. Kemp is going to be better there. And Wood. Simply Wood's going to be better because he's going to get more opportunity. You know how the Dodgers are kind of screwy with their pitchers. So yeah, it's great. It's great for all those guys' values.
Listen, yeah, the Cincinnati Reds, better than some people think.
Was that God?
You're still riding that horse, aren't you?
Ride or die. I'm going to ride the Cincinnati Reds.
I agree. I think the Reds are super interesting, and I'm going to really enjoy watching them now.
That is a joke from like when we first started the pod. I was into the Cincinnati Reds.
I think we should talk about, though, how this affects Jesse Winker owners, because a lot of those owners were disgruntled after this trade because there really doesn't seem to be a spot for him. So if you own Jesse Winker, what the hell are you doing at this point with him? Are you selling? Are you holding? What are you doing?
Yeah, that is a good question. Well, they had quite a rotation of outfielders last season. Oh, did we touch on are the Reds putting Senzel in center?
Well, right now the depth chart says Scott Schembler, but I can't imagine that they're actually going to go through with that.
Yeah. Neither do I. I mean, if that's going to end up happening, then I would assume Winker's playing left, right, over Irvin.
Well, there's no way that happens. Because Puig and Kemp have to play.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Bit of a conundrum.
The logjam is real.
Why is Scott Schebler a thing?
I don't know. He should not block Senzel, especially if they're looking to contend within the division, which is the only reason you make a move like this. Then Senzel has to be your center fielder.
Well, I mean, as you pointed out, a lot of these guys, their contracts are all up. So this may just be a year of partial playing time for Winker, and then he gets the full-time gig next year. So, I mean, because of the contract situation of the other guys, I'm holding.
Okay.
Great buying opportunity, says God.
Yeah, that's true.
I was just going to not acknowledge it.
I just can't help it. You guys are talking baseball, and I just want to jump. I haven't talked baseball with anybody in forever.
You're fully on this podcast. Stop hiding. Just get in here.
Yeah.
All right. I'll be here.
Okay. Hello, fans.
Jump in like 8 minutes late and comment on everything.
That's the story of my life, Keaton. That's what
audience,
I do.
The listeners here, Patrick has just been lurking in the background. And told us he was unavailable, but is clearly fully available. So this is a real thing.
Hi. Nice to be back.
Welcome back, Patrick.
I missed you guys too much to stay away. That's really what this is.
No, really what this is about is the next trade that you can't help but to speak about. So why don't
you go ahead and hold on.
Oh, what's up?
We weren't finished with the Dodgers one yet because there's some... whatever waterfall effects to the Dodgers as well, because now with Wood out of the rotation, does that mean that Kenta Maeda and Ryu are actually going to be in the starting five all season? They still have a lot of starters, but they're also still kind of looking for a starter if you're paying attention to the trade rumors. Dodgers rotation is actually something pretty interesting. Besides Kershaw and Buehler, where do these other guys fall?
I think Kenta Maeda 100% is going to get full run this year. I think it's the dumbest thing in the world that they've been taking him out of the rotation the last couple of years because of the way that his contract is structured. But he's clearly better than a lot of the players that they've played over him. And now they really don't have any options where you can realistically say, we're trying to win, so we're going to take him out. Like, he's really good when he's a starting pitcher. So I think they should play him all year.
I mean, I would agree with you, but that's not going to happen. And that's simply because I like Maeda too much. And so the universe is going to come into play here and take him out. I agree with everything you said. I think the pessimist in me will not allow me to get my hopes up that Maeda will be in the rotation all year. Right now, the depth chart has Ryu in the rotation, and Maeda is like a sixth starter, I believe. So, and their willingness to move Maeda to the pen worries me. So I think Ryu definitely gets a shot. And then, Stripling and Hill fill out the end of the rotation. Maeda will end up in the rotation simply because one of those guys is going to get hurt, probably Rich Hill. Rich Hill gets hurt like every year. Blisters.
They also have Dennis Santana and Stripling and Urias. So there's a lot of other options down there that are pretty close.
The team is built like a goddamn tank. So great.
They are pretty good. All right. So now on to what Patrick was really joined here is the Milwaukee Brewers traded Domingo Santana to Seattle for Ben Gamel and Noah Zavalis.
Santana.
I don't know. Well, Santana. Before we get into Patrick's overzealousness, initially, I liked this deal for Seattle in getting Domingo Santana and then kind of taking inventory of their roster right now. It feels like he went from one blocked situation to another. So they have Haniger in the outfield. They have Malik Smith. They also have Jay Bruce. So is Bruce going to end up playing first and kind of messing with Healy and Vogelbach's time? Or is that going to be the outfield and Santana is still blocked and he's just in another rotational situation there in Seattle?
I would think they're going to play him over Bruce, but I will say the depth chart has Bruce ahead right now, which is interesting. I refuse to believe that. Santana is going to play. I got too excited when that trade happened. I just refuse to believe that he's not going to play. He's definitely not going to play over Haniger. But I could see him playing over Smith or Bruce pretty easily. I think he's more talented than both of them. What do you think, Jake?
I think Domingo Santana is your starting left fielder, and I think that Ryan Healy and Vogelbach just simply don't play, or they're bench guys. I think it's going to be Haniger, Malik Smith, Domingo Santana as your starting outfield, and I think Bruce is going to be the DH most of the time.
There's also a chance that Seattle just ends up trading Bruce or anybody else on this roster before opening day. Is there still too much time?
But Santana presents like real value, and I held on to him all last year in the year leagues that I owned him in hopes that he would get playing time somehow. But that's a power speed combo, and particularly if you're in an on base percentage league, you got to scoop him up if he's available, or take him in your rookie draft this year. There's a buttload of talent there to be had.
He went crazy late in a 40-round 20-team dynasty draft that I just finished. And that was right before he got traded. So I imagine that many people haven't caught on to his value at this point. So if you're drafting anytime soon, you need to target him.
So you're saying he didn't go in the fourth round?
No, only an idiot would do that.
Guys, you remember? Burn. You remember he was good, right? You remember he was good.
And yeah.
What's great about him too is he's only 26 years old, and you know you've got 30 home run potential there with like you know double digit steals, maybe 20 steals tops. You know, 30-20. That's something to dream about.
Actually, that's a good point you bring that up. So he hit 30 home runs in Milwaukee, and now going to Seattle, do you see him still having that same ability to hit 30 home runs, or is that going to take a step back and be more of in the 20 to 25 range?
Yeah, 20 to 25 is probably a little more realistic, but I'm going to draft him like he's going to hit 30.
I think he could hit 30.
I expect you to, yeah.
I don't think that park kills power as much as it used to.
Well,
because the ball is juiced?
The ball be juiced, and I believe those fences got brought in a little bit. Yeah,
guys, the ball was de-juiced last year. We had a little bit of a tumble in home runs. I feel like definitely a tumble in stolen bases, though. That
ball's still plenty juiced compared to the minor league ball.
That's fair.
All right, Keaton. Well, then we can move on. Or not,
Keaton. What about you? Are you going to be targeting Santana anywhere?
Probably not.
Whatever. Do you hate him?
No. I'm doing one startup. It's more of a product of my own situation. I'm only doing one startup this year. And all of my other leagues you're in. So I'm not gonna bother.
Okay, fair.
If I were in a league that you were not in, I'd probably take a little peek. It's probably worth it.
All right, good. I was just checking.
All right. So moving on. The Indians traded Yonder Alonso to the White Sox, which is great for us because that's yet another team we have to remember Yonder Alonso is on. That one really doesn't have much meaning to me at all.
I think there's a bit of a bounce back for Alonso. I don't think he's spectacular, but I think, you know, he's not going to win your fantasy league for you, but I think there's a little bit of underappreciated value there.
I don't know if there's going to be much bounce back. I think his value might get a little tick up going there, but I think what he gives you is pretty decent. You know, last year in a down-ish year for him compared to 2017 anyway, he hit 23 home runs with 83 RBIs. That's good, you know, and especially what he cost. He doesn't cost so much. I think people were pretty skeptical about him even after his exceptional 2017 campaign. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I kind of like some cheap Alonso.
Yeah, I like cheap Alonso too. And when I say bounce back, I mean, I think he gets back to 30 home runs. I think he can do it.
What would you give up for Alonso if you were going to be trading for him in a dynasty league? Like what kind of asset would you feel comfortable parting with?
Yeah, definitely a first round pick, I think, for sure. That's what I think I would definitely give up a first round pick for him. What do you think, Jake?
I don't know. I think like in a first year player draft, I feel like I'd be comfortable giving up like a third rounder for him. Or maybe like some sort of a back end starter or something like that. Because of the position, obviously. And you know, the ceiling is not super high with this guy, but still that's production. So and I think I'd be looking to move him if I was a team in a rebuild mode.
Depending on how deep your league is for that first round pick, that was more of a joke because Jake and I are in a league called Scout Wars, and Jake has tries to be buying all my old men because he loves old men, and I'm asking for a lot.
Am I just not in that league?
Sorry, Keaton's in that league as well, but he's not part of this conversation.
Thank you,
Keaton. What's your thought on old men?
They serve a purpose. That's my thought.
But when they stop serving a purpose, it's off to the glue factory.
Yeah,
with
get
them,
out
right?
of here.
It is, yes.
Good, good.
All righty. What do we got next? Another devil three-way with the Indians sent Edwin Encarnacion and future junk to Seattle. Tampa Bay traded Jake Bowers to Cleveland. Seattle sent Carlos Santana to Cleveland. I forgot that they even acquired him from Philly in the first place, so that's fun. Then Cleveland sent Yandy Diaz and Cole Sussler to Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay traded Cash to Seattle. My God, these trades. All right, how do we feel about this one?
I guess I'll go first here. I think Santana and Bowers get a tick up. Just simply because the Indians don't have anybody who's going to really push these guys for playing time, and it seems like they're both going to slot in, one at first and one at DH. And I think that Yandy also ticks up because it seems like the Rays are interested in playing him. And he's a guy who could play DH, he could play third, he could play first. He can bounce around, and they like guys like that. So clearly there's something they like. I assume that the Rays are going to try and tweak his swing a little bit, because if you aren't familiar with Yandy and the size of his biceps, just go Google Yandy Diaz lifting, because he's a giant, and he hits the ball really friggin' hard, but he hits it right into the ground.
Yeah, I was going to say, so this if is... only he would lift the ball into the air.
Yeah.
This is totally a Patrick guy, though, right?
Like, oh, absolutely.
Patrick, if Yandy like does start putting any sort of launch angle on the ball, like, he's your dude.
Yeah, I own him where I can. I think he's a great player to target because of this increased playing time probability. Particularly, I think he is a great util guy. You know, I don't think he can be a starting third baseman except for deeper leagues. But those of you in like 16, I think you could throw him into your util spot and be fine, particularly if you're an OBP. That's really what I mean. OBP leagues, he has value until he does magically change his launch angle and become an absolute beast.
That's a really bad launch angle.
Yeah, right? Dude, right into the ground. He hits it into the ground every time.
Yep, directly at the worms.
All those worms are dead, though. They're like annihilated. Like, just guts everywhere, worm guts all over the baseball field.
They sing songs about him in worm beer halls.
I think we have our open.
He's their version of Grendel.
Oh my God. Ah, that's good. All right. Yeah. And then, Encarnacion to Seattle, just feels like a Nelson Cruz replacement, or I guess that was prep in the Nelson Cruz leaving kind of deal. But that feels kind of a bit like a wash. That I think it's actually a pretty good fit in Seattle. So that's an old guy that I would I'd be fine going after. Moving on to the next trade, Washington Nationals As mentioned earlier by Jake Tanner.
Before we move on, I just want to get a quick joke in. Okay. You know Vogelbach? If you own him on your team, you should change your team name to Vogelblocked. All right, that's it. I just wanted to get that joke in. We can now we can continue with the show.
Honestly, I don't think we can.
We can. I believe in us. We're not Vogelblocked. We can get through it.
That was very timely.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Can you focus? Can you get back? I'll get this next one. Where are we? The Washington Nationals? So the Washington Nationals traded right-handed pitcher Tanner Roark to Cincinnati, but Keaton already touched on that a bit, right? Or do you want it?
Jake, but yes.
Okay, Jake touched on that, so we're fine there. And the Pittsburgh Pirates...
Wait.
Oh, never mind.
His value goes down.
Any pitcher that goes to Cincinnati's value goes down, I feel like.
Except Amir Garrett.
Definitely not Amir Garrett. He's great.
So I drafted Tanner Roark in that startup I was talking about as like one of my back-end guys right before this trade happened, and I was pissed.
Yeah, I would have been pissed too.
I would think that like if he was going to be like a 4 ERA guy at Nats Park, he's going to be like a 4.3, 4.4 ERA guy in Cincinnati. I'm not happy about this.
Yeah,
them's the breaks.
I'm not really happy about it either, but I was never owning Tanner Roark on any team that I have.
Oh, why? Because he's too old for you?
Yeah. He's out there. He's going to swing a cane in the National League.
Send me all your old guys, Patrick.
Keaton, you want to take the reins back? You okay?
Yeah, I think I've recovered enough from that doozy. Pittsburgh Pirates traded Ivan Nova to the White Sox for Yordi Rosario and future junk. Ivan Nova, worth the stash or a late round pick on?
He's not on my radar, I don't think.
Same.
This dude is off my radar.
Great.
Don't like anything about him. But you know who's interesting on Chicago right now is Manny Banuelos.
No way. From the past. No way.
Yeah. No. Yes.
Are you serious? Dude,
he threw super well last year. He really did in the minors, But, dude, he was enticing. He's going to be someone that I'm going to put on my radar in super deep leagues.
Do you think he gets a shot in the rotation or in the pen?
I don't know. But, you know, he's got pedigree. He does. He's a lefty. Lefties live forever.
How old is he now?
27. 20,
almost 20.
All right. Well, we've seen crazier things.
Yeah. I mean, pitchers, right? You just figure out one thing and then boom, here's a contract. You guys aren't buying my Ben Willis stuff, are you?
I'm not. Well, I'm a 3.7 ERA in the PCL.
The PCL is tough to pitch in, man.
It is.
I mean, granted, he's an old guy for the PCL.
Boy, that whip isn't great, though.
No, it's not great.
Yeah, I'm going to chalk that up to I don't believe you.
Yeah, you're probably right. also, I want to say that I hate what they're doing in Chicago. I know that Patrick's going to hate this take. And you might hate this take too, Keaton. But I think their rebuild sucks. And I think that it is going terribly. And I hate almost everyone on their roster.
Well, one, that sounds like an article. You should write it up. Two, what?
Yeah, I disagree with that. I like the roster.
I like Cease and I like Eloy Jimenez, and I don't like much else there.
I really like Yolmer Sanchez, and I know I'm in the very, very vast minority on that. I like him. Their outfield is interesting, too. They've got guys. I enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah, I have no problem with it. I like the pitching prospects. I like Cease. And who was the dude that got hurt last year? Kopech. Yeah, I like him a lot. Do you like Kopech, Jake?
He's fine. He's still a thrower. He's not a pitcher.
I mean, he became a pitcher in the second half of last year, right? That was the whole thing.
You talked to me about this before.
Yeah.
You tried to make your case to me. I like Cease better, actually, right now.
You don't like Zach Collins?
Don't you say a bad word about Zach Collins. I swear I will come down with the wrath of some sort of god on you.
And I don't like Luis Robert either.
What?
You don't like Madrigal? You don't like Dane Dunning?
That's where we differ. I don't like Madrigal.
Patrick, you're like fading, bro.
I just think that Madrigal is a little boring. That's all.
But boring.
60-65 hit tool, though.
Yeah, you know I hate hit tools.
Boring is like exactly what you do like, though. You like fat, slow mashers.
Yeah, that's true. So I guess I do like boring. But they're more fun to watch because they're watching out of like bigger people do athletic things is fun. Case in point being that catcher for the Twins.
Astudillo,
yeah. I just wrote him up.
If the season were to start today, what is the standings of the AL Central at the end of the year?
Cleveland. The Royals at the bottom.
It's a strange way to do this, but go on.
I know. Well, yeah, I'm just kind of... Yeah, I think the Twins and then White Sox and... I'm missing someone.
Detroit.
That's the... Oh, boy, they're bad, too. Ugh.
It's a really bad division.
That is a bad division. I think Cleveland, Minnesota, Chicago... Kansas City, Detroit.
So Minnesota's got a shot now, huh?
I think so. Yeah. We were talking about this before you ghosted us and came on here.
I mean, Chicago, the White Sox clearly aren't ready yet. Cleveland's window is closing. If they ship Kluber off, are we really confident that they're going to win the division?
No. But he did say as of today, and as of today, he's still on the roster.
Okay, that's fair. I'm going to go, you know what? I'm going to say the Twins, just because I think Kluber gets moved. So as of today, I think Kluber gets moved.
Okay.
And I think that the...
I'll allow it.
I think that the Twins are going to win that division.
So I've got a hot take for you. I think...
You say the Royals.
Cleveland hangs on. I think Minnesota is going to be second, but I think Kansas City is going to be third, and I think Detroit is going to be fourth, and the Chicago White Sox are going to be fifth.
Sounds like a bet.
Sounds like a bet. I'm in.
Well, it sounds like I'm looking something up right now, but then I'll be willing to make a bet after I look something up.
Okay.
The Royals have a sneaky, decent lineup.
Where, do they?
Merrifield, Mondesi, Alex Gordon,
Sal
Perez, Ryan O'Hearn. I like it. And how much speed is this team going to have? So much speed.
All right, so the bet, Jake, I have is Keaton says Chicago will finish ahead of KC in 2019 standings, and Jake says Kansas City will finish ahead of Chicago.
So what is the bet going to be, though? What are you guys betting? That's my question.
I don't know. We have a whole season to figure it out.
Let's bet a jersey on it.
Ooh.
Right. So if Kansas City finishes ahead, you get a Kansas City jersey. If Chicago finishes ahead, I get a Chicago jersey.
Done.
Love it.
All right. I'm not going to lie. I've completely lost where we are in this.
We're at – I'll take the reins here.
Okay.
All right, so our
three
next
hosts, one podcast
is the Arizona Diamondbacks in a doozy, trading Paul Goldschmidt to St. Louis for Carson Kelly, what is left of Luke Weaver, second baseman Andy Young, and future considerations. Patrick, what say you about this deal?
Love it for St. Louis. Paul Goldschmidt to St. Louis is going to be great. I do like Carson Kelly a smidge. But that opens up, like, the Cardinals don't need him, with, Knitzer, is that how you say his name?
Knisner.
I just fell in love with him writing him up the other day.
He's so
good. Oh my goodness, that swing is beautiful. So they don't really need Kelly. And then I am not a believer in Luke Weaver, and that rhymes.
You're not a Weaver believer?
I'm not a Weaver believer because he burnt me so bad last year.
Did you go all in on his breakout?
I did in a couple leagues. That my rationale does not allow me to endorse him in any format. So maybe you guys feel differently. Jake, you're a pitching dude. What do you think? Actually, you're more of a hitting dude, huh?
I think his sequencing is like that of a 12-year-old with little understanding of baseball.
So it's just constant fastballs?
It's terrible. Yeah, it's and so no change bad, up. Man. Weaver has decent pitches taken on their own, but they rarely work at the same time. And like I said, the sequencing is brutal. So I wouldn't completely give up on him if you own him, because you'll get nothing for him in a trade right now. But man, there are a few guys I can think of whose stock has dropped more over the last two seasons than Weaver's.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to a pitching rotation of Weaver and Shelby Miller in Arizona.
Bad news for you. Miller was DFA'd, I believe.
Oh, that is bad news for me.
So do we think that Paul Goldschmidt's value is going to be negatively or positively affected by this move, or no change at all?
I really don't think there's a change. If there was going to be a change, it was going to come in last year with the humidor, which did have an impact on offensive production there. I don't think there's a change at all. What about you, Keaton?
I was reading, so I don't know who we're talking about.
Paul Goldschmidt? Do you think his value value stays the same?
It still stays the same, which is a top two first baseman. Freddie Freeman, I still think, is number one. I don't think this is enough to put him over there, but he's nasty. He's going to get you average OBP, whatever league you play in. He's going to get you home runs. He's going to steal double-digit bags. He's like the whole package. So it's tough to it definitely doesn't take his stock down at all. But I don't think it's enough. Just the change of venue and the Cardinals' double magic, I don't think is going to be enough to put him over Freeman. But he's still solidly the second first baseman for me.
Also, this means that the Cardinals are going to win the division now.
Yeah, I could see that.
I really think so.
I was actually
with Andrew Miller.
I was actually thinking about cooking up that bet before as a hot take, but guess it's not going to work if the two of you agree.
It's going to be a real fun division to watch. I kind of like what Milwaukee's been doing, and then if the Cubs end up landing Harper, then that'll be pretty wild.
Do you think that the Cubs' geriatric rotation of John Lester, Cole Hamels, and Yu Darvish, and whatever's left of that arm of his, holds up?
No.
No, I don't either.
I mean, what
that's a bad news rotation right now.
Especially with Quintana sliding and Hendricks being their de facto ace.
I've got more faith in those two players, though, than the other three that you mentioned.
But do you like the Cardinals rotation better? I mean, Martinez and Mikolas is great. Flaherty is probably pretty clutch, but 4 and 5 is a complete mystery.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that those are the biggest question marks on the team, but they have... They're well positioned to do something if they need to. And they also have guys that can come up like Ponce de Leon, Gomber, Gant. Like, there are a few guys in there. Alex Reyes. There are guys who could come up and get some run in that.
Reyes is going to start the year on the rotation, yeah?
Is he going to be healthy?
Yes. He's going to be healthy.
But I don't know. It's a fair question.
I'm looking at their depth chart right now. I'm looking it up.
They still have Adam Wainwright.
Yep.
They do. He's 37.
Do you guys remember when he like called a talk show about how he was going to be the best fantasy player? Like they were like, he was like really mad at how low he went in a mock draft or something.
Nope.
I do remember that.
No, it happened and it was funny. Yeah, they don't have Reyes listed in the rotation right now, but I imagine he's going to be in that rotation. So then you have Martinez, Mikolas, Flaherty, Reyes, and like Waka or something. Oh, they have him listed. Actually, they have him listed as a number 6 starter, Reyes. I don't know. I like their team a lot. I like what they've done. I think you're right. I think they win the division.
Their pen is really good too.
That's interesting though. So is I still think, I think the Cardinals rotation has more upside, but I think the Cubs is more reliable.
I would disagree.
Yeah, I would disagree with you as well, Keaton.
That's right. You guys can both be wrong.
I'm used to it.
Yeah, you are.
We're going to have to come up with a bet limit with all of these bets that we have going on here.
I know. We haven't even gotten to 2019 yet. And we've got three or four.
What I do really like, though? I like Brandon Woodruff in the rotation for the Milwaukee
so
Brewers next
do
year.
I love Woodruff. I can't wait to see what he's going to do with a full-time gig.
Watching that guy throw.
You wrote a triple play about him, right?
I did, yeah. But I was not as high on him. Like,
a little triple play?
He came in guns blazing towards the end of last season and into the playoffs. His fastball is easy. He makes it look easy, like an easy 95, 98. Like, I'm in.
Mississippi State Bulldog, woo!
Yeah, woo.
Is that your alma mater?
Sure isn't.
All right, gentlemen, I actually have to bow out now. I have a family Christmas party that is post-Christmas happening now, so I'm going to jump out of the-
Great. We have two more to get to. What's our time at? 50 minutes? Well, so much for this being a two-parter. Well, it might be like a legit two-parter. We might just record a whole new podcast tomorrow.
They couldn't expect us to get through this many trades.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
We got sabotaged by Patrick, too, so that
yeah.
didn't help.
All right, well, I mean, since we're already at 50 minutes, we might as well finish these last two and then do our resolutions.
Yeah,
let's make this a whole pod here. All right, so the last two, some biggies. Seattle Mariners traded Robinson Cano, Edwin Diaz, and Cash to New York for Jay Bruce, Anthony Swarzak, Gerson Bautista, Jared Kelenic, and Justin Dunn. I like this one for both sides.
I do, too. I thought about this trade for a long time. Because when it was happening, you'll remember back to like the 50 iterations that were reported of this trade and
yeah.
the money going back and forth. But I'm going to point out two things that I really like about it. For the Mets, I love the addition of Diaz and Cano to help them now. And I love for Seattle, Jared Kelenic. The more I watch video on Kelenic, the more I see an Andrew Benintendi type player, and I'm not saying that he's going to become that because those are ridiculous expectations, but I think that that's the type of ceiling that you're talking about with Kelenic. I love him. I'm going to be buying in on Kelenic in every league that I possibly can. So go take a look at that swing. It is... He's got great hands and great bat speed, and he doesn't have a lot of moving parts, and I like that. So, and I think he can stick in center field.
Yeah, I'm actually also a huge Justin Dunn fan. I've kind of been on his bandwagon since he was drafted. He had a really good debut in 2016 in short A. His first full season in the minors in 2017 took a bit of a step back, but there was still some flashes of what could be. And then he started putting it together again last season. Got 156 strikeouts in 135 innings, 3.5 ERA in 24 starts. He looked really, really good and kind of back to the clout from when he was drafted in, I believe that was the first round. Yeah, first round. So he's a guy that I'm really surprised they were able to get included in that deal. But it seems like a lot of people are down on him, both fantasy and in industry. But he's a guy that I still believe in and really kind of started to put it together with these numbers last season and was able to rein in the walks as well. So it's not only that his strikeouts got better, his walks got better. He had some really good movement on his pitches. And he's still in the lower minors, so we'll see as this – I think he only had a small sample – in double A, so he'll be back there again, presumably to start the year. So that'll be interesting to see if he can keep this going, but he's a guy that I believe will be able to keep it going. So I like all kind of all of the pieces that Seattle was able to get. Plus, the Mets got probably the best closer in the game at the moment. And they got a guy who can help them compete now and got Seattle to pay a bunch of Cano's salary. So both sides, really, for me. And that was kind of just seeing reaction on Twitter. There was a lot kind of back and forth saying that the Seattle gave up too much or the Mets gave up too much. But I didn't see a lot that I remember seeing your tweet that you liked it for both sides, but that was the only one. And that was the same take that I had. I felt that it was a pretty strong move for both squads.
Yeah, I agree. And the more I look at it, the more I think if I had to pick a side, I slightly prefer the Mets side just because I think it carries a little bit less risk. But when you're getting a guy like Kelenic and Justin Dunn, you mentioned no slouch there. You know, you're getting a lot back. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Seattle manages this quick rebuild that they're trying to do.
All right. And then the last trade we have is, again, with the Mariners. They traded Gene Segura and Juan Nicasio and James Pezos to the Phillies for Carlos Santana and J.P. Crawford, who then they shipped off Carlos Santana again. So, but I kind of like this trade for both sides, too. Gene Segura had a heck of a year last year, and the Phillies seemed kind of out on Crawford as their really an everyday player, either at third or short. And this, I think, gives him some playing time in Seattle in a team that Topoto has said has a two-year rebuild window before they're competing again, so they don't need to force him into playing time or sit him on the bench because he's hurting him like the Phillies would, and the Phillies in turn get a shortstop who can help them compete in the now, which is clearly what they're going for.
Yeah, I like it too. I especially like it for Philly because I think Gene Segura is one of the better shortstops in the game, and I like envisioning him in that park. I think he's going to have a little bit more power. And then in terms of J.P. Crawford, his value goes up if you own him because he's going to get regular playing time. So,
right.
Yeah, it's good all around for all these players.
Yeah, and then the last thing, that's everything that's happened up to date, but some rumors to hit on. There's really only one main rumor that we kind of touched on a little bit earlier, but do you think that Kluber or Bauer ends up getting traded from Cleveland to somewhere else?
I think Kluber, just given his age and sort of some of the signs that we've seen from him being just a little bit less sharp than typical for Kluber, I think someone's going to trade for him. And I'm really hoping it's a National League team, and all the rumors so far have been National League teams, because I think his career will get a prolonged sort of peak if he does get traded to somewhere like the Padres or the Dodgers or something like that. So I still love the talent there, and I think he's the guy on the move.
Yeah, the latest that I saw today was San Diego, and I tend to agree with you. It'd be great if he went to a National League squad. I would be a little worried if both San Diego and the Dodgers have the farm to get him, and I would be terrified of that Dodger squad if they were able to add Kluber and sign Harper. That is a wagon of a squad, and there's still plenty of time that both of those could end up coming through, and I would be pretty terrified of that.
Yeah, it's high time for them to do something like that because they've just been right on the cusp for a few years, and it's about time they push the chips in. So I would like to see that as well.
Absolutely. All right, so moving on to our fantasy New Year's resolutions. So Jake and I, we both came up with four, so we'll go back and forth, and then on the next pod, Adam and Patrick will have theirs. So we'll just go back and forth. So my first and most important resolution for fantasy is to win my home league. And I was the 2017 champion, got knocked out in the playoffs last year, but our current champion is just absolutely insufferable. It's already been a terrible reign in this offseason. He bought himself a championship WWE belt for the league. He's been sending us taunting promo videos all offseason. It's just a nightmare. And we can't allow this dude to win again. and go through a whole nother year of this. So my biggest resolution is to avoid that at all costs.
Nice. What's the format on your home league?
It is a 8x8, 12 team with average and OPS.
Oh, cool. Nice. You guys must have some pretty stacked squads on that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge difference in a 12 team to a 20 team. But yeah. It's a unique quirk in that it's a real life salary league, and we use the luxury tax as a hard cap, and you use real life salaries.
Nice.
So that adds That's a nice really wrinkle cool. to it. Yeah.
Well, my first one here is to win TDGX2. Came pretty far last year. I think I finished with the second best record overall for the season, and had some really good underlying numbers. And I think I improved my team in the off season. So I want to take that sucker down this year and prove to Merc that I'm the real champ.
Calling out these this false rain here. That's
exactly right.
Well, I have my second one is TDGX2 related. I have a goal of making the playoffs. So originally I had this at finish in the top half, and then I realized that 8 teams make the playoffs, so I might as well just go for the top 8 instead of the top 10. But I have a really solid core of a team. My pitching could use some work, but because this is the draft where all the keepers from the invisible hand go back, this is the best chance for me to get some pitching within the draft. So I think my core is strong enough that if I add a pitcher or two, it can easily make the playoffs. I don't know if it can compete, but definitely should be able to make the playoffs. And so just the minor moves that I need to make to make that happen is what my goal is for this year.
I'll be rooting for that to happen.
Nice.
For me, my second one is to repeat in the league that we mentioned before, Scout Wars. It's a 24-team league that myself, Keaton, and Patrick all play in. And I won it last year in the inaugural year. And I have Vlad Jr. being added to my winning squad this year. So things are looking pretty good there, but I'd like to terrorize people for another year in that league.
Nice. I like it. And I probably helped you with that Verlander trade, but I like the pieces that I got back, so I don't feel bad for it.
Same.
My third one is to build up my farm in TDGX2. So last year being the initial draft, I didn't pick a prospect until I had filled out my majors squad. So I didn't pick a prospect until round 26. So there was a whole bunch of prospects that were gone by then. So my farm was pretty slim. I made a couple moves this offseason to add guys. So it's kind of turning around. But it's headed in the right direction, but still needs a lot of work. So I need to put some more effort into my farm for TDGX2 for the upcoming year.
Yeah, that's kind of related to mine, too. I didn't wait that long till drafting prospects, but one of the things that I have been guilty of doing in a lot of my bigger leagues, especially, you know, 16, 20, 24 team leagues, is ignoring the first-year player draft, basically not familiarizing myself with those names and the talents until those guys get some major, or I should say minor league games under their belt. That's when I kind of start looking and paying attention. But I think the deeper the league you're in, the more you really need to read up on these guys before they even get drafted. And I am fully committing myself to watching a little bit more college baseball, looking at some more film on these guys, and trying to familiarize myself with the names. So when people start talking about the next Jared Kelenic or Nolan Gorman, I already am well aware of these guys, so I can kind of get in early on the value.
We should do a podcast trip to the College World Series this year.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
I'm into it. Yeah. All right, my fourth one is go undefeated in the head-to-head matchups versus the others on this pod. So that is Patrick, which should be a piece of cake. His team is trash. Jake and Adam.
Ooh, that's not going to happen, buddy. That's a tough goal.
That is a tough goal.
You're going to need some things to ride your way for that one. But yeah. I like it. I like the boldness there. My last one is to invest in the international market. Again, like the first year player draft, there's a lot of guys that get signed on J2 day. So it's kind of tough to separate out all that stuff. And there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of podcasts and a lot of lists that you can listen to and read. And I'm going to try and do my best to distill that down for you guys, the listeners, this year, and also kind of look a little closer there myself again till, you know, you want to get in on these guys before the big lists start talking about them. So I'm hoping to be a little bit earlier on those guys.
Yeah, I like diving in on some of those top names right away. I love myself some international fellas.
International man of mystery, Keaton DeRocher.
Exactly. All right, so that finally wraps up this pod with a little bit of help of Patrick there for a bit as he is on his vacation over in Seattle. So this has been Dynasty Child, part of the Dynasty Guru website. I have been your host, Keaton DeRocher. You can find all of us at the Dynasty Guru, where I am in the in the process of putting together a Dynasty owner's take on the Profar trade and kind of how Texas ended up handling him, as well as writing up some comments from our rankings lists. Jake, what are you doing right now?
Currently, I'm kind of being lazy right now. I'm going to release another edition of my Red Sox podcast over at Over the Monster, the Red Seat, next week. I'll be working on some player target pieces over there and working on these rankings debates right now over at the Dynasty Guru. It is fully ranking season still, so we're having a fair share of disagreements about players, and I forgot to rank Matt Olson, so I'm going to go flog myself a little bit for that one.
Yeah, that's all right. That happens to everybody. I forgot to rank Bregman last year. So It happens. Adam, I have no idea what he's doing. He's doing things. He's doing a great job of producing this pod, though. That's for sure. And Patrick, again, no one really knows what Patrick's doing.
No one ever knows what Patrick's doing. Yeah,
he's doing rankings things. I do know that, and that's about it. So you can find me on Twitter at The Spoken Keats. You can find Patrick on Twitter at The Green Magnus. You can find Jake on Twitter at Dev Jake. And you can find Adam on Twitter at The Statcast Era. So that'll do it for this off-season edition of Dynasty's Child. And as always, be the best bird dog you can be.